From the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax, but buckle up, and let's wade into the deep end of what's really happening in your old North State.
Welcome to another edition of Civitalk. This is Ray Nothstein with Brooke Medina. The last 15 minutes of this for radio is going to be an interview with Nat Robertson, the former mayor of Fayetteville, North Carolina, on offshore drilling, so stay tuned for that. It's going to be very interesting. It has our president, Donald Bryson, who, along with myself, asked some questions. But we're going to talk a lot of holiday stuff here to start out, so I'm excited about this. Everybody gets excited, for the most part, about Christmas, about Thanksgiving, and just the holiday and New Year season in general. So what do you want for Christmas, Brooke?
Ooh, what do I want for Christmas? I love hearing that question because I like to answer it. I have a very, very long Amazon wish list.
You like my wife. It seems
yes.
Like a...
Oh, it's so
you all
much
are like kindred spirits.
Kelly and I need to hang out more. I'm sure of it. So I have this Brooks Christmas wish list on Amazon, and it has a ton of books. And so that's really nerdy, and that's
really
not
nerdy.
A lot of fun. But, oh,
but I love
my goodness.
Books, too.
What I would really like, though, is a reading sabbatical so that I can go and enjoy all of those books, because I have tons of books that I surround myself with, but where's the time to actually
read
them?
I need a spa reading sabbatical.
Ooh, like, yeah.
Doesn't that sound good?
Yeah, where they have coffee on tap.
Where you just read and, you know, you've got, like, people giving you massages.
I don't know
about
that.
You stuff. Is that a little weird?
Yeah, it's a little weird to me. But I would like to be left alone and read and have somebody bring me Reese's peanut butter cups and, like, unlimited coffee with maybe a little bit of Kahlua. Poured into the coffee.
I don't know what I want for Christmas. I was a weird kid because I would not want my parents to spend money on me for Christmas. I would actually tell them I didn't need anything. And, you know, there were a couple times I remember when we lived in Hawaii and my dad was stationed at Hickam Air Force Base. I remember opening Christmas gifts because we got spoiled because my mom usually stayed home with us, which is a great blessing. But she worked part-time at the library on base for about a year. And so she just used all that money to buy us extra Christmas gifts. And so we were so spoiled. I remember like being actually tired of opening gifts, like taking breaks and almost taking a nap because you're like, there's just so many gifts under the tree.
Oh, that's
so
funny.
I was one of those kids that like felt guilty about getting way too many Christmas gifts.
I was not one of those kids. I was very happy. But I think part of that is because gift giving is my love language. So if you've ever read that book, The Five Love Languages, giving gifts is one love language. Quality time is another. Words of affirmation. Physical touch. And then what's the fifth one?
I have no idea, but my wife is always reminding me that she is acts of service, I think.
Oh,
I'm
acts
probably
of
getting
service.
This wrong.
Service is
and,
another one.
Maybe she's gifts and something else, but she's definitely gifts. I know that.
Well, you know, I just watched I read an article on ABC 11, and this was so disheartening. I did not like to even think about this, but it says nearly 7 in 10 people want to skip gifts during holiday season, survey says. So 69% of people that were surveyed said that they would rather just opt out of the gift giving aspect of Christmas. And what do you think about that?
I think gift giving is important. It's just a reflection of our Christmas tradition, our Christian tradition, reflecting the ultimate gift of the incarnation and God coming down to earth and just being a part of our humanity and rescuing us from not only our sin, but just the danger of ourselves. So really, the gift giving, I think, reflects the gift giver, right? So that's all that's going on there. So I think to be anti-gift in a way is to be what you're doing is you're being an anti-pro-Christmas, which is really just about the incarnation of God and becoming man and how key that is to the Christian tradition. So, you know, I always look at gift giving as a positive, even though I'm not a good person to go out and buy gifts. I always struggle with what I'm going to get my wife or what I'm going to get my family. It's always a big struggle for me. So I just have a hard time going out and buying gifts. But I think it's a positive thing. I like to receive gifts when they're good. And my wife's one of the best gift givers I've ever met. So she has always knows. I don't even give her a list because she knows what I want more than I know what I want. So it doesn't make any sense for me to even give her a gift, to give her a list at all.
Just trust her with it, right?
Yep.
Okay.
She knows what's best for me.
I'm sure she likes to keep that, have you keep that in mind.
Yeah, but so. She has to tell me what she wants, because I think our first Christmas we were married, I got her some kind of like leather satchel where you could put it. It's kind of like a computer bag or something. And she refused it. She said it was too manly. So
you got her a man bag, Ray.
Basically,
that's
what it was, I guess.
Of course she thought it was
cool. I thought it was cool. And it was something I was excited about getting her. And she like said, this is a man bag.
So you I tried.
And there were other gifts that I got her that were good. But the one that I decided to get her on my own to be a surprise was an ultimate failure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Well, it's okay. One can try, though. I'm not the best gift giver for my husband, because he just, his, a gift to him is like, don't spend any money on me, because then I won't worry about the bank account
he
going
sounds
down.
Like me kind of.
So that's the best thing I can give him in his mind, but I don't like that, being someone who does like to show my love through gifts. But anyways, that brings me to the next all-important conversation, which is many Americans will be observing the high holy day of Black Friday.
Yep. You bow down to Black Friday, everybody.
What are your thoughts on Black Friday?
I just, as a wannabe Luddite sort of, I'm just not that into the whole materialistic show. I think it's a positive when people are out there saving money. So obviously I'm for that. But just seeing some of those clips from the years on news where people are like crashing into Walmarts, it's almost like zombies in our culture, you know, to get materialistic things, whether it be big screens or other sort of gifts or toys. And they're acting like total ignoramuses.
Mm-hmm.
And just sort of seeing like people fight over material products that really don't have any deeper meaning is really, really bizarre to me. And so I don't really relate to those people at all. They kind of frighten me. I just have a hard time wrapping my concept around the Black Friday thing. And now that they're trying to move it to Thanksgiving Day, you know, on that Thursday,
yeah, I
that really
that.
Bothers me. Or they do, you know, so many of these just on an important day that you're supposed to be with your family, you're trying to crowd out family with more materialistic shopping. I find to be bizarre and not a good thing for this country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That aspect of it where we're putting products over people. And that is what happens sometimes on Black Friday. You do see that happen where people get like the mace out in the Walmart line. And I'm not talking about like a old weapon mace, but you know, the spray mace, and they just begin just harassing other people because they want the particular item. That's unfortunate. However, there is the other aspect that some of us Black Friday shoppers really enjoy, and that is the adrenaline and the thrill of standing in long lines because we might get that amazing deal. And I know some people will roll their eyes, but I am one of those people that thoroughly enjoys Black Friday. I have spent evenings out in the back of my minivan with my mom and sister, and we have waited for Toys R Us to open. It's just fun. I enjoy it. And one Black Friday, we were pretty wild. We stayed out all night long, and then...
This is coming from a homeschool family, people. So her definition of wild is very different.
Wild, yeah, in the Medina home. No, but afterwards, after we had spent all night Black Friday shopping, my mom and I got our noses pierced, and my
Are
sister got a tattoo.
Oh, my gosh.
So, needless to say, we have a lot of memories attached to Black Friday, and it's a very special time for my family.
Yeah, I used to not be a Christmas person. I was kind of a Scrooge. The Grinch was actually my favorite holiday
not
show.
Not your favorite,
And then I thought, like, why is the Grinch selling out? You know, why is he selling out at the end and being a positive character? And he just had such a good Scrooge mentality. And then he kind of sold out at the end. So I was always
choosing to love and have his heart grow.
Yeah.
That was a sellout.
I'm kind of a Scrooge, but really, just in seminary and reading Athanasius on the incarnation and really understanding the true meaning of Christmas has really transformed me just in a positive spirit about Christmas. And, you know, one of the things I love about Christmas carols is the theology is so simple and so deep and true. And, you know, the theology is just so rich. I mean, you can get more out of a Christmas carol than many modern sermons in America today. And I just find that that whole spirit to be so great. Hark the Herald Angels Sing by Charles Wesley is one of my favorite hymns, and it's just powerful, the meaning of it. And you can just go through it. And back then they used hymns to teach theology because a lot of people couldn't read. And so that's how in the church settings, that's how they taught theology is through hymns. And so just wrapping your head around what Christmas truly means, and not to just speak in platitudes or be a little bit trite, but I mean, what Christmas truly means has really transcended my view of Christmas. Because I used to be a total Scrooge, only because I'd get upset to see people just be materialistic and stuff. But if you have a very, I think, thorough understanding of Christmas and what it actually means, it really can transform your heart and change your whole perspective on life. And, you know, having been alone for much of my life, I got married at like 35, and a lot of Christmases were hard, you know? I mean, it was like you went home to parents, but you didn't have a family, so to speak, like other people your ages as well. So Christmas has just been, you know, sometimes for me a little bit rocky, and sometimes you feel a little bit alone. But I think if you really just study what Christmas truly means in the Christian tradition, then it just enlightens and opens your eyes to such a deeper significance.
That is good, Ray, and that is spot on. I agree with that. For all the jokes we make about the gifts and Black Fridays and things like that, that really is. Christmas can be, I would say, it can be characterized in one word, and that's Emmanuel, which means God with us. And that is what we celebrate. And so it is an exciting time of year. It is the Advent season. And it is a holy time. And so we do celebrate with that in mind. So thank you for sharing that. I think that's really good.
And Advent really has to do with this whole idea of just expectation. And I think that gets into a little bit of the gift giving too, right? Just that whole expectation for something to great happen. And that really reflects the whole Christmas spirit, as you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Advent is something I think that is seeing a resurgence among at least the Protestant communities.
Absolutely.
As well. The observance of it, where it is each week there is this, you light the new candle and you're covering a different aspect of the Advent season, which is that anticipation and expectation. So definitely a fun thing to do, but also a somber way to enter into the season with the right attitude and heart. But you know what? There is something that is happening before Christmas, and it will be the last time it happens before we enter into the new year, and that is the final Civitas poll breakfast. So we typically do a poll lunch, but this November we are doing a poll breakfast.
We have to get up early.
We do. It's going to be you're gonna have to become a coffee drinker.
I'll never become a coffee drinker. I will do anything but that.
So November 27th, which is this upcoming Tuesday, we are going to be having a poll breakfast. So our final results actually just came in this afternoon. I haven't even gotten to open my email and look through.
I heard some rumors, and there were some really interesting little tidbits in there.
I did hear that there were some interesting results in there, but. That's going to be November 27th at the Holiday Inn off of Hillsborough Street in Raleigh. But if you go to nccivitas.org/breakfast, that's where you're going to be able to purchase your ticket. So tickets are limited, and it's going to be a great one. It's going to be the last one before the new year. But it's also going to be the day that the General Assembly comes back into session, and they're going to hammer out and iron out all the details of voter ID and maybe some other things. And so we may even have a legislator or two there, I think. But we want you guys to come on because the food's really good, right, Ray?
The food is actually excellent. So that's one of the big positives to go into the event is not only speakers and Mark Roderman and Donald Bryson are going to be given the poll results.
Yep, they are. So Mark Roderman is our guest commentator this November for the poll breakfast, and he is the host of Front Row with Mark Roderman, which is on a number of stations, but UNC TV is and North Carolina Television. There's just a number of stations that carry that. You can also watch it online. So he's going to be our commentator, and as well as Donald Bryson, and they will be offering their insight.
Yeah, and if you come, you can hang out with Brooke or Ray. I mean, you'll want to hang out with me, and I know you have to be polite to Brooke, but you should come.
Yeah, just at least give me a courtesy nod.
Yeah, just say that you listen to the podcast or you hear us on the radio, and we'll be glad to talk with you and chat with you.
Yeah, maybe we can sit next to each other, and you can share your extra, if there's like dessert or coffee, you guys can share it with me. That way I don't have to embarrass myself by asking the waitress over and over again for refills. So anyways, please join us. We would love to have you join us. You can get those tickets at nccivitas.org/breakfast. So the limited time, that's going to be next Tuesday.
Now we are going to close out the show with Nat Robertson and talk about offshore drilling in North Carolina. Today on Civitalk, we have a special guest with us here today, Nat Robertson. He's a former mayor of Fayetteville. And we're in the studio with our president, too, Donald Bryson. So it's good to have both of you with us today.
Always glad to be on CivitTalk. Yeah. Nat, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. What an honor to be here with you.
And we're going to be discussing offshore drilling. It's been a hot topic since the president and the Interior Department decided late last year, early this year, to open up more waters, more coastal waters for offshore drilling. So there's a lot of controversy with it. There's a lot of pushback, particularly here in North Carolina. We're going to discuss that issue today. It's a passionate issue where folks in the eastern part of the state are particularly passionate about. So we're just going to have a discussion, find out more about this issue. Why is it so debated, and why is there so much pushback, especially given some of the economic positive indicators that it would bring to North Carolina and really all over the country. So Nat, why don't you just tell us a little bit about the controversy, what's going on, because, you know, we've had the governor here talking about not off our waters has been a big saying of his. And of course, a lot of the governors really are against offshore drilling. If you look up and down the Atlantic coast, it's not just Democrats, it's Republicans too. The governor of Maryland, I think the governor of Massachusetts is a Republican. The governor of Florida has kind of been wishy-washy to some degree. I think the South Carolina's Governor McMaster has been against it. So just give us some of that overview of why is there so much opposition.
Sure. I think people, quite honestly, are a little afraid of what they don't know. And the more you get into it, the more you study, the more attractive the proposition of just exploring looks. Looks a lot better. So, you know, one of the things that kind of led me to this was the economics of the whole process. 2 years ago, we went through Hurricane Matthew, and a lot of municipalities and counties were left short of budgets in order to fix their infrastructure. And that is one of the things that if you would have looked in advance, that this issue could solve for these communities, especially in eastern North Carolina. You know, I hail from Fayetteville in Cumberland County, and we were devastated by Hurricane Matthew and didn't have the resources on hand to go in and fix some of the roads that were washed out and fix some of the bridges in advance. You know, we were having to wait for FEMA money and for the federal money. Had we had the opportunity to use some of the resources that come in from offshore, then, you know, perhaps we would have had that money. We would have had the personnel, the first responders, to be able to call as a resource. We would have been able to fix the roads. So the devastation of a natural disaster like Hurricane Matthew would not have hurt us so, you know, as badly as it did in Fayetteville. And, you know, when you look at the coastal towns, most of them have little economic resources, period. So, you know, to be able to bring in the resources that that offshore may provide, you know, we're talking about $4 billion over the next 20 years is a windfall for local communities.
Yeah, that was one of the things I was wanting to ask you, Nat, or I guess I should say Mayor Robertson. You were formerly mayor of Fayetteville, which is the fifth largest city in North Carolina. It's not exactly a metropolis, but it's a pretty significant town. You know, you're not, you know, Sheriff Taylor or anything. But it's inland, right? So what drew you, mayor of a, you know, fairly large city in North Carolina, but an inland city, to this idea of offshore drilling?
Well, a couple of things. The group Explore Offshore, which, you know, I would encourage anybody to learn more about at exploreoffshore.org. But the entire organization is just saying, look, we don't know what resources are out there. Let's look at the continental shelf. Let's look and see what it may be able to provide for us. And they might find it's not worth drilling out there, but there again, they might find that it is. And we're able to capture some of those economic successes for our local communities and our state.
Mm-hmm. All right. And again, you're the North Carolina chair for Explore Offshore USA, right?
Correct.
Now, what is that group?
We're a group of concerned people that believe that, you know, we don't know what we don't know, and we're supportive of going out and exploring to see what is offshore, what natural resources actually exist for us, and what that may mean for the next 10 or 20 years.
Nat, I'm from the Mississippi Gulf Coast, and of course, I lived through the Deepwater Horizon spill of BP, and I think that's one of the things just our many of our residents and citizens in North Carolina, especially on the coast, are nervous about. Absolutely. A big spill like that. Obviously, I'm old enough to remember Exxon Valdez.
Sure.
And what kind of changes has been made or regulations or things that maybe you can put people's minds at ease on those issues? Because one of the things that BP obviously shelled out a lot of money, but it impacted people. Even if they were compensated, their way of life was fishing. Their way of life was so ingrained in the community. Absolutely. On the Gulf Coast that it was affected in ways that were beyond the monetary value.
Right. And I believe everybody learned valuable lessons from both of those tragedies, to the point where, you know, the government has now put in a lot of restrictions on what can and can't be done. And technology has changed, too, since that's happened. You know, in the most recent decade, I think there have only been, a handful of very minor spills on coastal waters. And that's, you know, all over. That's not, you know, the Atlantic or the Gulf. That's everywhere. Just a very small handful, a very small spills. Most of them were probably required to be reported, or else, you know, would not have been. So, you know, I think technology has changed. I think regulation has changed to the point to where if we were to find something offshore and if we were to drill, we're in a much safer place now than we were, you know, a couple of decades ago.
One thing that, it's controversial in North Carolina. A lot of the green energy subsidies that we see in North Carolina, we see in a lot of other states, you know, these tax credits and sometimes out and out subsidies of wind energy, offshore wind, solar energy, and that sort of thing. People really want to move to clean energy. And of course they want to, aside from, you know, people being concerned about the coast, they're just opposed to fossil fuels, period.
Right.
But a lot of this, if there is energy potential offshore, off the North Carolina coast there, a lot of that might be natural gas. And I've been reading an awful lot over the past few months that, you know, natural gas is significantly cleaner than oil. And people are starting to view it as sort of a transition fuel to sort of that green energy future, right, assuming that we move there. You know, do you hear a lot of that people are interested in trying to utilize natural gas to transition?
Yeah, well, absolutely. Natural gas is certainly the cleaner resource that we're hoping to find out there. But, you know, personally, I'm a renewable guy. I believe, you know, that our renewable resources are really the way of the future. Unfortunately, we're just not in an area right now, not a geographic area, but on the timeline to be able to count on renewable energy. It's not in the market the way that it should be yet. And it's just not available yet for all of us to be able to get on board with. So, you know, I'm thinking that's at least a decade out, possibly two, before we're more reliable or more dependable, rather, on renewable energies. And we're going to have to do something. I tell you, right now is kind of good for everybody. You know, gas prices at pump are below $2.50 in most areas, and that is that's great. But you're not going to be able to count on that, you know, for long term. In fact, you know, we're coming down off $4 and something a gallon not too long ago. So, you know, when prices are low, you don't want to think about, you know, what's going on offshore. When prices are high, you're going, there's got to be an alternative. So, you know, right now it's just not a priority for a lot of people, I don't believe. But long term, we have to look and see what resources are available.
Jumping back into some of the political arguments, I think one of the big things that I see in North Carolina are, I know that Josh Stein has made this comment, our attorney general, but others have said it, is they go, why does Florida get, and this is something I've asked myself, why does Florida get an exemption on the offshore drilling projects and North Carolina doesn't? You know, obviously, those that are in favor of offshore drilling are not going to want that exemption, but they kind of look at it as a little bit of a hypocritical stance there, maybe.
Yeah, you know, the state of Florida, because of its geography, is very vulnerable to a lot of things that, you know, maybe we are not so much exposed to. And quite honestly, you know, by them not having by them not being able to participate, they are missing out on a lot of revenue and a lot of the economic advantages that something like offshore will bring. You know, they're just in North Carolina, they're talking about $20 billion per year in spending an investment to, you know, to be able to pursue offshore. The average salary of the person that would work towards this is over, well over $100,000 a year. I think it's over $116,000 a year is the average income. I mean, that competes pretty well with what most of these small communities along the coast, you know, are currently seeing. In fact, I would tell you that probably doubles or triples many of the household incomes in those areas.
Yeah, just following up on that real quick. I mean, having been down to South Louisiana a lot in my life, I've seen some of the just the big homes and some of the money that comes in from offshore drilling and like those jobs you describe. But, you know, we hear a lot in North Carolina and nationally about a rural-urban divide, and there's not a lot of opportunity for some folks in rural areas. What can offshore drilling bring to just maybe the average guy, the average worker that may have interest in this industry? I know you kind of cited some salary figures, but what other opportunities and things can that bring to them and for their life and maybe just for them to flourish more?
Well, just the jobs that surround the jobs that are directly involved. I mean, it's a multiplier. And you know, for local governments that I come out of, you're talking about almost $6 billion a year in revenue to the governments. You know, with taxes and fees. So, I mean, it's just a tremendous windfall if they find something offshore that we don't know is out there yet or not. And that's what Explore Offshore is all about, is looking to see what resources may be available out there. And again, I would encourage everybody to go to exploreoffshore.org to learn more about the organization and to join our efforts and, you know, making sure that if we go in that direction, that we're an organized group, and it's a well-organized process.
And that's a fair point. We're not even, I think part of your point is we're not at the point in the process that we can even make a cost-benefit analysis because we don't know what's there.
We don't know what's there.
You're not talking about putting holes in the ground. You just kind of want to find out what's there at this point. And there are people that are even opposed to even just trying to figure that out, which I think is sort of an unreasonable position of, you know, let's poke around and look a little bit.
Absolutely.
We know very little about what's off the coast of North Carolina. But, I mean, is that generally, you're not even saying, yes, let's absolutely go drill. Let's just take a look.
Well, we don't know if there's anything to drill to start with. And if there is, you know, pockets out there, we don't know if it's economically feasible to get it out of the ground. And that's what this group is, you know, encouraging to see what resources are out there.
And how many, I know that you're the North Carolina chair, but how many states is this group operating in?
Well, Explore Offshore goes, oh my gosh, I think we've got seven. We've got five states along the Eastern Seaboard that are participating in the Explore Offshore process. But there again, we're advocates just to see what natural resources may be available for us.
All right. Excuse me. Can't cut this cough out. Has any sort of exploration gone on off the coast of North Carolina?
It's been over a decade since they've looked around out there, and that's why we're encouraging the government to proceed in opening this up so we can actually look and see what is out there and what makes sense to be able to get out of the ground. And, you know, the other thing, too, is many of the objections are because, you know, you don't want to picnic on the beach and look out there and see all the oil rigs and things like you have on the Gulf Coast and or in Texas. You know, the folks just grow used to it. But, you know, we're talking about tens of miles out. So nothing would be visible from the beach. You know, it wouldn't be cluttering up that area. Picnicking with your family on the beach, you'd never even know what was going on offshore. So, especially in the testing.
Thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it, Mr. Robertson. And you have any parting words, just anything that you need to get out there in terms of offshore drilling? What does the average person really need to understand about this issue if you just sort of wanted to wrap it up in 20, 30 seconds?
Well, you know, I think the average person needs to be a little better informed on what Explore Offshore is trying to do, what our objective is. And you can learn more about this organization and join the efforts at exploreoffshore.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can follow us on Twitter and, you know, get updates regularly. But stay informed.
Thanks for listening. That was our guest, Nat Robertson. For Donald Bryson, I'm Ray Notestein signing out. Thank you.